From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The idea of socialism as an alternative to capitalism is emerging as a popular one in the US. Our current capitalist world order has failed to meet the needs of most people and has fueled a climate crisis and a thirst for profits. But what kind of political system can really deliver the promises of a socialist utopia? Writing in a new book called Revolutionary Love, longtime political activist and leader Rabbi Michael Lerner paints a picture of a leftist vision based on empathy, community, and respect, what he calls love-infused socialism. Rabbi Lerner is the editor of Tikkun magazine. He's a best-selling author whose previous books include Jewish Renewal and The Left Hand of God, Taking Back Our Country from the Religious Right. His new book, the full title is Revolutionary Love, A Political Manifesto to Heal and Transform the World. Welcome to the program, Rabbi Lerner.
I'm delighted to be with you.
So first, when we say socialism, that word itself is very much a loaded one here in the United States because of our history of red baiting and McCarthyism. And yet today we have at least one major candidate who proudly calls himself a socialist who's running for president. And we have several members of Congress who are using that term. But how would you like to see that term actually mean something that is achievable and that can go beyond meeting material needs of people and can actually serve the broader needs of individuals and communities?
Yes, thank you so much. Socialism used to mean democratic control over the economy. We haven't seen any society that's done that. But the anti-socialists in this country and in other advanced capitalist countries have portrayed socialism as though it was already what was being done, and then showed people that they're not satisfied with that reality. So, but it's not just the fault of the capitalist elite of our country. It's also the fault of left movements that identified what they were doing as socialism, but actually not really creating a society in which the people as a whole shaped the major institutions, for example, the economy, but also all the educational system, the healthcare system, et cetera. I read with surprise Jeremy Corbyn, who was now running for election in the UK, giving a statement that says, I don't know why people think I'm against corporations. I'm really very friendly to corporations. Okay, there's a problem there. Corporations are not essentially evil, but they need to be taken over in a democratic way. They need to be run for the interests of people rather than for the interests of a small group of people who happen to have the capital that makes them the owners of the major corporations and the major media. But the kind of socialism I'm talking about is not only democratic socialism, but I call it a love-infused socialism, or I call it the caring society, caring for each other and caring for the earth. And let me say what its central characteristic is, a new bottom line. Today, we judge institutions, corporations, our economy, our political life, our educational institutions, our cultural institutions as efficient, rational, and productive to the extent that they maximize money and power. We need a new bottom line. That new bottom line will say that institutions that I've just mentioned and aspects of our society get seen as efficient, rational, and productive to the extent that they maximize love and caring, kindness and generosity, ethical and environmental sensitivity, enhance our capacity to respond to other human beings as embodiments of the sacred, rather than look at other human beings primarily from the standpoint of what can they do for us? How can I instrumentally use them to get them to serve my needs? And similarly, looking at the earth not only as a resource for human needs, but also beyond that as something that the earth and the whole universe is something that elicits from us awe and wonder and radical amazement at the grandeur of this incredible reality that we live in. To talk in this way is a different way of talking, and it's a way that many people on the left agree with these ideas personally, but then they never talk about them publicly. And so the kind of progressive movement that I'm talking about is one I now call the love and justice movement. The love and justice movement has to be one that leads with this kind of discourse, that puts at the center a new bottom line, and that talks about human need for respect, for caring, for generosity, for living in a world in which they are not surrounded by people who are only looking out for themselves, but rather surrounded by people who want to help each other and care for each other. That's the different vision.
Now, the corporate world has, has claimed, of course, that they are about innovation. Many people involved in, the heads of these big companies are, claiming to be socially liberal. And at their corporations within capitalist culture, there is a lot of talk about people needing to address their spirituality. A whole industry has grown up around mindfulness and focusing internally and meditation as a way to reduce the stresses that our capitalist culture has put on us. What's wrong with that kind of spirituality?
Well, it's one dimensional. Yes, I'm for it. I'm a rabbi and I'm a psychologist. And so I do believe that there's some place and need in people's lives for meditation, for psychological insight, for developing themselves. But it has to be connected to a deeper understanding of the way that the society itself, based on selfishness and materialism, based on maximizing one's own interests without regard to the consequences of others, that society undermines and makes it extremely difficult for most people to actually do the inner transformation, because at every moment they're surrounded by a society which is telling them, you're a fool unless you maximize your own advantage without regard to the consequences for others. And so I know this because I was granted by NIMH, National Institute of Mental Health, a research grant to study the psychodynamics of American society in the world of work and in family life. And I focused in particular on people who were moving to the right politically. My research started in the Reagan years. And what we learned is that many people were moving there not because they agreed with the racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, et cetera, of the right, but because they hated the left. And the reason they hated the left was because they felt that the left had no respect or caring for them. We need to have a movement that is able to see that the needs that people have are not only material needs, that people not need a sense of respect and caring. Well, you don't get that when you have, as your candidate in 2016, Hillary Clinton saying that half of the people on the opposition to her are a bundle of deplorables. That, of course, the right welcomed that and said, hey, look, these people, you felt that put down from them. They're saying it straight out. And unfortunately, they're not mistaken. The truth of the matter is that over and over again, I run into people who I talk about a different kind of world in the left, in the liberal and progressive social change movements. And I say to them, we need a world based on love and kindness and generosity, and talk about that. And they say, you're crazy. They'll know, those people are all racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, anti-Semitic, or stupid. Okay, that message is heard. You see, that message is actually heard by the people. We think that we're just talking to ourselves, but we have a culture of 50 to 60 million liberal progressive people in this society who are saying that, and that is heard by lots of people who are not in that.
But there is plenty of evidence to suggest that there is lots of racism driving that. I mean, it's hard for me as an immigrant woman of color to say to a white person waving a Confederate flag that I should care about them because they're, you know, wear their racism and their questioning of my right to exist on their sleeve. And we hear them.
Absolutely. And I make clear in this book over and over again that I am not talking about the core racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic elements in the right. What I'm trying to tell you, though, is they're not all of those people. That there's another segment of the voters, and either the voters for Trump and particularly the people who didn't vote at all in 2016, who are who have a different relationship. They are not voting for, they're not for what they hear on the right. They are just voting against what they've heard from the left. And so I am by no means wanting to suggest that there are a bunch of people on the right, the huge numbers of people who are open to what I'm saying. I'm saying there is a significant minority within that world that needs to be won back to liberal and progressive politics. And the way to do that is not to go out and say, as many people on the left do say, all men are sexist, all whites are racist. It's not true. It's not true that of all whites or all men. And we need to have a discourse that affirms that actually racism is not in the interests of white people.
And of course, those things that you were saying are often shorthands for saying things like we live in a patriarchy that men benefit from, or that, you know, we are we live in a racist society that whites have privilege in. And so sometimes, of course, that shorthand for saying the more nuanced and complex reality can be quite abrasive.
Yes. And actually, of course, that's true. But to open a conversation, see, I don't just want to be right. I want us to win. And to win, we have to ask ourselves, what is the way to open the hearts of people who have not been, whose hearts have not yet been opened by the liberal and progressive world? It's not because we don't have good programs. It's because we don't speak to their heart and we don't affirm their humanity. Now, this book is not only about how to do that, because the first third of my book, Revolutionary Love, talks about why this is so important. And it's important for another reason that I haven't mentioned. You see, when left talks about the capitalism, it often talks as if the major problem of capitalism is the inequality of wealth and income. That's important. But there is another equally valuable, not more important, but equally valuable. And that is that the capitalist marketplace puts forward the notion that we live in a meritocracy, in a society in which those who have made it deserve to have made it because they're smarter and better, or they worked harder, or they did something right. And if you're not in the top 10% or 20% even of income earners, it's because you are actually not deserving of it. Now, that has been what I learned in my study of the psychodynamics of American working people, is that that message is deep inside them, so that they already, almost everybody in this society is carrying a self-blaming story. So when they encounter the left of the liberal world, and what the liberal world has to say to them is, hey, you're racist, you're sexist, you're homophobic, you're xenophobic, you're an anti-Semite, you're an Islamophobe. What that does is it hooks in to the already bad feelings that people have in themselves, that they have failed somehow in the capitalist marketplace and that they have nobody to blame but themselves. That's why, by the way, I'm a critic of pop psychology and pop spirituality whose message simply is, you have created your own reality, now you can change it. Well, of course, as a therapist, I want to encourage my clients to take action with the areas that they can change. But what is different about my approach is that I simultaneously want people to understand what we're up against is a massive system that over and over again demeans people and makes people feel bad about themselves and exploits people. And in that context, it's not enough to say, oh, well, take responsibility. No, You have to take responsibility for your own life, yes, but you simultaneously have to tear down in a nonviolent way the institutions that have created radical inequality, but also radical, terrible feelings that people have about themselves that drive them either into reactionary politics or into drugs or alcohol or the current drug-taking epidemic. People, middle-income working men having a high level of suicide in our society today. Why? Because they feel that they have failed. They feel that their world is, that they have screwed up. We have to overcome that and help them understand that when people are surrounded by others who have bought the notion that everybody is just out for themselves, that they feel like they have to do that. So what I learned in this research is that most working people can't stand that they're in a world of selfishness and materialism, but they simultaneously believe it's impossible to change it. And this is why one of the central messages of my book is don't be realistic. Don't let the people who control the media and the people who shape your daily experience in the work world convince you that everybody is out for themselves. Actually, most people would love to live in a different world, but why they don't believe that, why they don't act on that is because they believe that everybody else is really selfish and materialistic.
Do you feel that in this world, the centrists, and by them I mean the Barack Obamas and Joe Bidens, who have been telling the left flank of the Democratic Party to shut up and sit down and let them, you know, return to a pre-Trump world, the centrists are you know, a huge part of the problem?
Totally right. And that's why I'm calling for us to create a something like analogous to the Tea Party of the right. I call it the love and justice movement that would work inside the Democratic Party on the one hand to challenge the fundamentals of that party and to legitimate the vision of a socialism of love, a love-infused socialism. Bernie has taken some steps in the direction of legitimating socialism as a economic program, but he hasn't spoken yet in any serious way about the way in which it destroys loving relationships to live in a society that teaches selfishness, materialism, and looking out for number one. When people look at the breakdown of family life, about the difficulty of finding a loving relationship that is sustainable, they fail to notice that the problem is that there are so many selfish people, but these selfish people are not selfish because of some gene in them. They're selfish because they've come to believe that they would be fools to be the only ones who care about others if everybody else cares only about themselves. And this is why one of the things I ask people all the time when they tell me everybody's out for themselves is, well, is that true for you? No. Well, is it true for your 10 best friends? No, not really. So I say, why do you believe that? And the answer is, well, I know it's not true about my best friends, but it's true about everybody else in the world. In other words, it's not just the media and it's not just the experience in the world of work. It's that all of us carry the same capitalist created story about who we are and who everybody else is. And so that then makes people feel like, well, then socialism will never work. A different kind of world will never work. We have to be realistic and compromise and get what we can get. And that's where the centrists in the Democratic Party come right out and say, okay, then forget about all these larger changes. Let's see if we can get some minimal steps, because the minimal steps are really what all that can be achieved, whereas these larger visions of a different kind of world are really the enemies of getting even the little steps won.
I would argue that the centrists are themselves invested in the current world order, are invested in corporate America being dominant in our lives, because they're part of corporate America.
Well, you're absolutely right for the main ones there. But when you look at polls and see that the centrist candidate, the former vice president Biden, is still leading in many polls. Yeah, I have to ask. They are not the ones who own and control the corporations. They are ones who bought into the worldview of the corporations, not because they wanted, they're going to make more money that way, but because they are resigned and don't believe in the possibility of possibility. And this is where a spiritual or religious worldview comes in, because a spiritual worldview teaches us that the world, it can be fundamentally transformed, that there is a power in the universe. I call it the God of the universe, but I'm not attached to God because revolutionary love is not about any particular religion or religion at all. But it's saying that you can learn something, that there is a vision of the force that makes for the possibility of transformation from that which is to that which ought to be. And when the Bible says we're created in God's image, this is what it means. It means that every one of us has that same possibility to transcend that which is and go for what can be. I put it as, don't be realistic. Don't go for what those centrists are telling you. And I'm saying most of those centrists are ordinary people who have bought into it and are so sure that it's true that they're scared of the Bernies and the kind of thing that I'm talking about. They're scared of them because they're afraid that they'll lose everything and will have Trump reelected if you talk in these larger terms. Whereas what I'm telling you is, add not just an economic program, but add a psychological and spiritual dimension to our discourse, and people will be far less scared.
So what you're suggesting is these sorts of transformative plans that do exist, such as a Medicare for all healthcare system, such as a Green New Deal, ought to be discussed in terms of how they could transform not just our economy, but also people's individual lives and their well-being?
Yes. And to make a left that says explicitly, as I said, a new bottom line. We want a bottom line in which every institution, every corporation, our whole economy, our government, our educational system, our healthcare system, our cultural systems are judged efficient, rational, and productive to the extent that they maximize love and caring, kindness and generosity, ethical and environmental sensitivity. This is a different way of talking. It's a very important difference. It doesn't mean abandoning them. On the contrary, in my book, Revolutionary Love, it's much more revolutionary than anything that any of the Democrats have put forward. For example, I propose an environmental and social responsibility amendment to the U.S. Constitution that would require not only banning all money from politics except that which is given by state or federal government equally to every major candidate, and no other money of any sort from any source allowed, okay? Not only that, and not only banning the Electoral College and having a direct election, but also a requirement that every major corporation with incomes above $50 million a year must get a new corporate charter once every 5 years, which will only be granted to those that can prove a satisfactory history of environmental and social responsibility to a jury of ordinary citizens, to a jury of ordinary citizens who receive information from people all around the world who have been affected by the impact of that corporation on their environment and on the social reality, on the conditions of work, et cetera. Now, this goes way beyond what Bernie is presenting. It's not, so please don't think, oh, I'm suggesting let's just be love and kindness and not deal with the social structures. On the contrary, I say we can go much further towards democratizing our economy but that ESRA, the Environmental and Social Responsibility Amendment to the Constitution, which is in the book Revolutionary Love, that has to be put forward in a context in which we're affirming the humanity and the goodness of other people, and in which we put at the center that what we're really trying to do is to create a world in which love is possible, which instead of where love is constantly undermined, there's nothing worse for a loving relationship or for sustaining families, for sustaining a loving relationships with others. Nothing worse for it than the ideology of the capitalist marketplace.
Right.
So you see, so we have to be able to be seen by the rest of the society as people who genuinely care about them. And to do that, we have to create a left which cares about each other also, because I've been in the left for the last 55 years of my life, started it when I was 21. And I've been in this left for a very long time. And I can tell you that anybody who's been around for that long sees that most people do not treat each other in the left with love, kindness, and generosity. Instead, there's very often a lack of genuine caring for other people. And that's what drives people into right-wing churches, and where they then hear right-wing ideology. Because those churches, whatever else, they do actually show a lot of caring for people. They then tell them lies about what is the best way to get that in the larger society. But they, in the day-to-day practices, they actually are often very caring institutions. We need the left to be that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Rabbi Lerner. Good luck with your book, and thanks for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your program.
I hope people will
insist that their local bookstore carry Revolutionary Love. But if they don't, they can get it by going to tikkun.org, tikkun.org/LJ. The LJ stands for Love and Justice.
We'll post a link to that from our website. Thank you so much again for joining us.
God bless you.
My guest has been Rabbi Michael Lerner, editor of Tikkun Magazine, best-selling author, and we've been talking about his latest book, Revolutionary Love, A Political Manifesto to Heal and Transform the World. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.